Hello, and welcome to the Lowell Quarter Three 2018 Results Conference Call. My name is Alicia, and I'll be your coordinator for today's event. For the duration of the call, your lines will be on listen only. However, there will be an opportunity to ask questions at the end. Just press star one at any time to register your question. If you require assistance at any time, please press star zero on your telephone keypad, and you will be connected to an operator. I'll now hand over to your host, John Trott, to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thank you, Alicia. Welcome, and a very good morning. My name is John Trott, and I'm the Head of Investor Relations of Garfunkel Lux Holdco II. I'd like to extend a warm welcome to you all as you join us for a review of our Q3 2018 interim results. With me today are James Cornell, CEO of our group, Colin Storer, Group CFO, and Matthias Gerhardt, Group Director, Corporate Development. Our presentation today is via webcast. Both the presentation we'll talk through and the accompanying interim financial statements are available to download at any time from our corporate website, www.lowell.com. Following the call, we will also upload a copy of the webcast to the website. Turning now to the presentation and the key housekeeping points on slide three. These being the same as at our Q2 2018 results. However, it remains important for us to provide appropriate context as to how we have laid out and captured our results at the outset of this call. On the 20th of March 2018, we closed the acquisition of the carve-out business from Intrum. As such, the interim financial statements, being the unaudited consolidated statement of financial position, the consolidated statement of comprehensive income, and the consolidated statement of cash flows, capture the trading of the carve-out business for the three-month period to 30th of September 2018, whereas the prior year comparative captures the performance of the Extant group only. To aid your understanding of our underlying business post the acquisition of the carve-out business, this presentation reports the year-on-year and quarter-on-quarter performance on a pro forma basis, i.e., the current period views being the three months to September 2018, the 12 months to September 2018, or as at September 2018, and the comparative prior year views include, on a like-for-like basis, the performance of the carve-out business. As a result of the adoption of IFRS 9 on 1st January 2018, our disclosures are consistent with our Q1 and Q2 2018 reporting, i.e., we present net portfolio write-up within total income for the three months to 30th of September 2017, as opposed to net portfolio write-up being previously presented within revenue and operating expenses. With that wrapped up, I'll now hand over to James Cornell, Lowell CEO.
Thank you, John. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for taking the time to join us today. Let me open with slide six and a review of our progress in Q3. Progress that continues strongly and in line with the positive delivery that we laid out at the half year. In just 12 months, the business has come a long way. This time last year, we had only just announced our acquisition of the carve-out business, and I'm pleased that throughout this period, we have taken consistent actions to grow our business in the right way and for the long term. Before I talk to some of the particular positives of the quarter, I think it's important to provide a reminder of our strategic objectives as it continues to guide all that we do as a group. Our strategy is focused around the achievement of growth, diversification, innovation, and consumer focus. It's only through the pursuit and development of these drivers that we will further improve the financial well-being of our clients, our consumers, and our investors, both debt and equity. This matters, and it's really important to us that we do it really well. For me, we can assess our Q3 and year-to-date performance under three key lenses: our increasing scale advantages, the benefit of the breadth and depth of our diversification, and our delivery of consistent returns, with all three aspects demonstrating how our actions support our continual desire to grow the business for the long term and in the right way. We've seen a record run rate of NPL acquisitions on last 12-month basis to September 2018, with some 481 million pounds of capital deployed, building increasing scale whilst being mindful of our guidance on leverage over time. At the same time, we have signed a multi-geography, multi-year IT infrastructure partnership, an agreement that supports our strategy to industrialize and standardize our IT operating model of One Lao, helping us to leverage our scale to drive greater efficiencies in the future. Also, this agreement will help accelerate the separation of the Nordic platform from the transitional service agreement we have with Intrum. Our regional and sector diversification continues to drive origination success above our return thresholds. Evidence that our in-market scale and presence and our wide sector coverage are reaping benefits. I'm pleased that the combination of both newly signed and extended forward flows builds on our continued strength across non-FS sectors in the UK, and in the Nordics, we have completed a carve-out transaction with one of the largest pan-Nordic FS clients, strengthening our position as the leader of SS and the partner of choice in that region. As already mentioned, from a returns perspective, the business continues to invest for the long-term benefit of our debt providers and our equity holders, continuing to be disciplined by investing in the right assets with attractive return profiles is fundamental to developing our business in line with our strategic objectives. This quarter has been no different, with returns on capital deployed in line with those guided by others in the sector, such as Arrow, for example, on a blended basis in the mid-teens. I'm also delighted to announce an important step in both the maturity and sophistication of the group's capital structure. The establishment of a UK securitization facility, the proceeds of which will be used to pay down our existing RCF borrowings, the securitization will further diversify our funding and provides increased flexibility to support the continued growth of the business, whilst also reducing the group's weighted average cost of debt. But to conclude the introduction, Q3 has been another consistently strong and successful quarter for the group. And without wishing to come across as arrogant, our continued strong performance is not a surprise to us, of course. The actions announced today, the industrialization of our IT infrastructure and the diversification of our funding places the group on an even firmer platform for the future.
Thank you, James. Good morning, everyone. With that summary delivery by James, I'd like to move to the detail on slide 8, if I may. And slide 8 demonstrates our pro forma growth across our key metrics. You can see continued like-for-like growth evident across our now much enlarged, more diversified, and more mature group. Our scale, reach, and presence across the three largest consumer credit markets in Europe is facilitating the delivery of such strong organic growth, particularly in the UK and the Nordic region, whilst our diversification across geographies, products, and sectors provides meaningful downside protection. Turning to slide 9, and with the reminder that the analysis is on a pro forma rather than a reported basis, you can see just how well the business has delivered in terms of consistent quarterly and last 12 months top line organic growth. Cash income was up once again, up 7% year on year to £849 million for the last 12 months to September 18, with the group's diversification across both region and service line providing a natural insulation to individual markets or service offering trends. As a reminder, we report cash income given our primary audience on this call are the providers of our funding, as it's a cash measure that allows the reader to understand collection on assets owned and fees and commissions earned from our servicing activities. The ongoing reporting of cash metrics remain fundamental to understanding and interpreting the underlying business. Moving to slide 10, I'd like to take a moment to help people understand a little bit more about our 3PC or servicing activities, as we've actually taken a number of decisions consistent with our focus on growing the business in the right way. At the same time, this is an area where our flexibility and client focus is ever more paramount as local market developments provide context to our aspirations. So what do I mean by that? Well, firstly, it's worth saying up front and once again, our servicing activities remain a core part of our business model, not least because in some regions we are seeing a trend towards combined servicing and debt purchase opportunities. Such developments have two key aspects to us as a group. Firstly, it is the overall economics of the contractual arrangement with our client that is important to us. By this, we mean we're happy to work to what is a lower 3PC margin if it means that we also secure a higher margin DP element on the same opportunity. Secondly, such relationships provide the optionality to flip portfolios from servicing to debt purchase at a later date. This goes to the very heart of building strong, mutually beneficial relationships with our clients. Because from a client perspective, the opportunity to blip provides certainty of immediate cash flows, whilst from our own perspective, the opportunity to flip provides a further off-market channel for origination that offers us two benefits. We retain 100% of the collections, so such deals are immediately accretive, and because we've previously serviced the portfolio, we've got greater insight with which to price with confidence and minimise downside risk. So with that context, let me touch upon our more specific strategy for our service offering. In the UK, our 3PC activity accounts for around 1% of the group's pro forma last 12 months cash income. It's very small. We're in the process of relocating these activities to Leeds. This allows us to integrate and strengthen them with our core operations, and in the process, reduce our UK overheads. At the same time, we're also evaluating our go-to-market proposition to ensure a better alignment with the requirements of our key strategic clients. In the DACH region, the drivers of both softening cash income and gross profit are well understood. On a last 12-month basis, we are now at the peak point of impact from our conscious, value-accretive decision to flip a couple of portfolios that we've talked about previously from 3PC into DP. Together with the market trends that I noted at the start of talking around our 3PC journey, we direct attention on regional performance to look at total cash income, total gross profit and cash EBITDA for DAC. Because pleasingly here, we're seeing our overall DAC performance stabilise across these metrics. In the Nordic region, we've seen a reduction in both 3PC cash income and gross profit. And this is principally attributable to the payments business. A business line you'll have noted is to be divested, given our announcement earlier this week. Actually, it was last week, time escapes me. Since acquiring the carve-out business, we've been evaluating the payments business specifically and how it fits into our core offering of 3PC, debt purchase, and invoicing and information services across the Nordics. Over the last year or so, we've incurred increased net losses during the ramp-up stage in growth. Whilst the payments business has had success in building a strong client franchise and a position in the market, making it attractive to the right buyer, we feel that under our continued ownership, the platform would require further time and investment to reach both critical mass and indeed break even. And as such, it's absolutely the right decision and it's an appropriate time for us to divest this non-core offering. Facilitates greater focus on our core credit management services in the region. As a welcome side benefit, we're also now intensifying our relationship with Collector, who were the successful acquirer. Overall, we continue to grow our business in the right way. Our 3PC offering continues to be an integral part of this approach, and it supports the further strengthening of our strategic client relationships. I move on to the group's gross profit and cash EBITDA performance, which is captured on slide 11. Gross profit, which we define as cash income less normalised collection activity costs, i.e. after adjusting for non-recurring costs and exceptional items, its net of exceptional income and excluding lawyer service activity, is up 8% to £596 million on a pro forma basis for the last 12 months to September. And just for clarity, our gross profit is stated after collector headcount costs. Gross profit and cash EBITDA growth has outpaced cash income, and we think this is a result of both margin improvement within our debt purchase activity and also a slightly higher overall contribution from the debt purchase line as well. Our cash EBITDA has increased 13% quarter on quarter, 10% year on year, and we've achieved £422 million on a last 12 months basis to September 18. Turn to slide 12 and the quantum of our purchases. The group has deployed a significant amount of capital over the last 12 months. We continue to build scale whilst being mindful of leverage. We do appreciate that there are some who would like to see us invest less to improve leverage in the very short term, but the attractiveness of prospective returns means we've made a considered call to deploy capital the extent that we have for the medium and long-term benefit of the business. We've invested around 1.9 times our average estimated remaining collections replacement rate over the last 12 months. That's investment that will allow for deleveraging in the medium term. With such investment success, our 120-month ERC for the pro forma group grew by 14% year-on-year and now stands at just under £3 billion. Slide 23 within the appendix provides further insight to our ERC profile, and you'll be able to see from that slide that just over £1.1 billion of cash is forecasted to be collected over the next 24 months. Our average ERC replacement rate for the pro forma group at the end of Q3 2018 stands just below £250 million, and we continue to include a specific disclosure in the Act of Transparency in the appendix of this presentation as to the basis of our replacement rate calculation. Our calculation methodology has remained consistent, disclosed on a regular basis within our results presentations and also within our respective accounting teaching materials. I'd hope that our use of an average replacement rate is well understood. The only time we talk about the average is in the context of understanding the excess cash generation of the business under a hypothetical steady-state scenario, because the starting point for such analysis is our last 12 months pro forma cash EBITDA. Put simply, it's appropriate to use an average replacement for the same historical period. On slide 25 within the appendix, we present the typical steady-state cash flow waterfall. The waterfall starts with our last 12 months cash EBITDA, as we believe it may enhance an investor's understanding as to the underlying cash flow generation that can be used to service or pay down debt, pay income taxes, purchase new debt portfolio, or be used for other uses. But critically, it's always important to point out that the last 12 month cash EBITDA number does not fully reflect the cash collection potential of recent purchases. And we actually acquired $220 million of investment in the last 6 months. Such strong recent purchasing success naturally softens cash EBITDA growth in the short term, as we see a greater element of our front book moving through the peak of collection activity costs, but not yet hitting peak cash collections. Our blended static gross money multiple across the 2017 and year-to-date 2018 vintage stands at 1.9 times, and when considered alongside our net return profile, you'll appreciate we are comfortable with both metrics. The blended GMM is slightly down from where we stood at half year. However, this doesn't reflect a lowering of return hurdles. It's simply a byproduct of a higher mix of acquisitions coming from UK paying portfolios, such portfolios being characterised by a lower risk profile and critically requiring a lower cost to collect. Our portfolio acquisitions remain well diverse across sectors and by geographical origination, with slightly less than half of our purchases coming from our various forward flow arrangements. This gives particular confidence as we know these assets well, and our forward flow quantum provides a healthy level of coverage against the group's replacement rate. We note that there will always be a high level of interest as to our purchasing aspirations. Whilst we have to remain mindful of forward-looking guidance, I would steer people to employing a degree of care when comparing the growth rates of the past. As we stated, the group is now far bigger and far mature, and as such, I wouldn't expect purchasing growth to the same extent as the current year-on-year increase. Moving on to slide 13, and our consistent forecasting accuracy is once again evident, as is the net return on owned assets. So let me first talk through the left-hand side of the slide. Each bar on the chart correlates to a specific static pool date and shows the actual collections for the subsequent 12 months compared to the static pool forecasts for the same period. The percentages in the dotted boxes show the actual collections out to September 18 compared to the same static pool date and forecast. The performance as captured clearly demonstrates the prudence of our estimated remaining collection forecasts across a number of years and across varied economic times. The forecasts we've made, underpinned by our data insight and capabilities, have always proven marginally prudent in each and every period. And one important aspect to call out, the static pool for performance we present is a dynamic picture. What I mean by this is that where we've seen sustained overperformance against the prior period static pool, I say in this case, say December 16, this outperformance is captured in the new static pool forecast for 17. And it's against this raised benchmark that we then deliver our performance. As I say, such performance-based testimony as to how we deploy capital and how we apply data insight and process innovation to deliver that track record of ongoing outperformance in our collections. and given our forthcoming change in innovation agenda, we remain confident in our ability to achieve further uplifts in collections. It's worth reiterating what others have said about this topic. Excluding revaluations from analysis makes no sense, and revised collection expectations follow real performance trends. Turning to the right-hand side of the slide, and a brief update on our return on debt purchase metric following its maiden disclosure, I guess, at half year. As a reminder, this metric shows the net return we generate from our portfolio investments and provides additional insight as to the embedded value in our backbook. The net return on DP has improved year on year and is consistent with the position disclosed at Q2 18. Such performance is important context once again as it demonstrates that our most recent acquisitions, i.e. those achieved in the last 12 months to September 18, remain at a healthy return level and do not lead to a dilution of the overall returns of our book. So to close my very long section, slide 14 shows our regional performance summary. I should be clear once again in stating our goal is not to grow each of the individual regions at the same rate. That's not how we manage the business, but instead to benefit from our diversification, which means the group has flexibility with regards to capital allocation, providing us with optionality as to where best to deploy capital to maximise returns. Stepping back, I'm pleased to say that we continue to deliver strong UK and Nordic organic growth, whilst our DACH region, for the reasons I've previously shared, is showing pleasing signs of stability. And with that, it gives me great delight to hand over to Matthias Gerhardt, our Group Director of Corporate Development, not least because Matthias has been instrumental in managing the divestment of our Nordics Payments Business Service, alongside delivering the next step in what we all believe to be a very considered, very thoughtful funding strategy. And as such, there's simply no one better place to talk through the funding progress we've delivered over the course of the year.
Thank you, Colin, and good morning. I'm confident most people will have already met me and recognize my Germanic tones. For those that haven't, and as just said, I'm Matthias Gerhardt. I'm the Corporate Development Group Director. This morning, I'm very pleased to announce that we've entered into a £255 million securitization facility. This is an important step in the continued implementation of the group's funding strategy, and it follows the increase in commitments to our revolving credit facility to €455 million, as announced during our Q1 call earlier this year. Before jumping into the detail of today's announcement, I would like to provide greater insight and context to our long-term funding strategy. We seek to achieve four objectives, all of which are firmly interlinked. The most important one is our continued ability to fund the growth of our business, what we refer to here as funding flexibility. We've seen some recent comment that our industry is heavily reliant on the high-yield bond market to finance growth. While we believe this to be a fair observation, our sector has already developed a number of financing solutions outside the high-yield bond markets. Those of you who have followed the sector for some years may remember that in the earlier days of our industry, we relied solely on bank financing. After the financial crisis and as a maturing sector, we were then able to open up the high-yield bond markets with Lowell as the first issuer in the sector. Since then, others have followed suit in size and have in addition implemented other financing solutions, such as asset-backed financings or co-investment structures with financial investors, or more recently, with strategic partners. For us, it is therefore a logical step to include such instruments in the further development of our funding toolbox. The third objective is to optimize our capital structure. This refers in particular to the matching of the maturity of our liabilities to that of our assets, as well as to match the currency mix of our liabilities with that of the cash flows from our assets. For instance, as we seek to establish an almost natural hedge in our asset liability management, we've accessed the bond markets in euro sterling and Swedish krona. Our fourth objective is to seek to both optimize our cost of funding and to reduce our leverage whenever economically rational, taking advantage of benign market opportunities for refinancings as appropriate. And it is in this context of our funding strategy that we've entered into a sterling securitization facility. Moving to slide 17, and the specifics of our new facility. It is a £255 million non-recourse asset-backed senior facility. The underlying assets represent an arbitrary selection of non-paying UK portfolio assets across various sectors. With an advance rate of 50%, the securitized assets represent about 20% of the 84-month ERC of the group as at the end of September 2018. The facility carries a margin of 2.75% over the one-month LIBOR, and it amortizes over 4 years. We will use these funds to repay our current drawings on the RCF. In this considered way, we are utilizing the facility purely as a capital management tool. Strategically, the securitization is fully in line with the funding strategy I've just sketched out. It diversifies our funding structure as it reduces our dependency on both high-yield and RCF funding. This affords us flexibility. At the same time, borrowing in sterling contributes to the optimization of our capital structure in regards to currency mix. And last but not least, this transaction facilitates a further reduction in our weighted average cost of debt, further improving our free cash flow generation. Needless to say, we are very happy to be able to announce this transaction, gives us flexibility and is testament to the strength of our operational platform, to our compliance processes, to the solidity of our assets, and to the inherent value in our back book. Turning to slide 18 and our leverage position. Pro forma leverage as of September 2018 and as measured by net debt to last 12 months cash EBITDA is at 5.2 times. This is in keeping with expectations and public guidance given the quantum of our recent purchasing success. And to be clear, this is the leverage position prior to drawing down on our UK securitization facility. The drawdown, together with the redemption of amounts outstanding on our RCF, will have no overall impact to our leverage position. And let me reiterate our intent to delever. Our medium-term net debt leverage guidance is below 4.5 times. As our cash EBITDA grows faster than the increase in our net debt, given the underlying cash generative nature of the business. We remain well positioned to fund future purchases from a combination of the underlying cash the business generates from operating activities, the cash we hold on balance sheet, and an RCF that will be fully undrawn post the drawing of our new securitization. As such, we do not expect to come to the high yield markets for further funding anytime soon. Not last, because we would guide people to anticipate future purchases to grow at a rate lower than our historical growth rate. And with that, let me hand you back to James.
Thanks, Matthias. So as an international Brit, I spend a lot of my time apologizing for Brexit. So that brings me to slide 20. Lowell is a well-diversified, economically resilient pan-European business. We remain of the view, as we set out after the EU referendum, that the UK's departure from the European Union will not have a major direct impact on our business. Our rationale being that though our group operates across Europe, we do not manufacture, import, or export goods or services within the EU. Neither do we trade internationally, or are we subject to potential passporting issues. Historically, we've performed successfully throughout economic cycles. Our operational performance was very resilient during the last financial crisis, despite extreme stress on unemployment rates and cost of living in a short period. In addition, our UK portfolio is now even more diverse and naturally hedged through payments relative to net disposable incomes than before. This gives us confidence in our ability to manage potential macroeconomic uncertainty, and we were able to obviously raise funds successfully post the EU referendum vote. We continue to monitor both the political and regulatory landscape for potential risk. We are conscious that further to the recent publication of the draft withdrawal agreement, we expect further details on the important future UK-EU relationship with the publication of the finalised political declaration. And we will continue to regularly analyse and respond to developments. As such, we remain confident in the resilience and diversification of our business model throughout the impending transition. And with that, let me bring things to a close with a slide 21. The quality of our results and the strategic progress presented this morning shows that this is a maturing, successful business growing in the right way for the long term. We are building on solid foundations and implementing a strategy that consistently delivers quarter on quarter, year on year. Lau's investment agility through its diversification has allowed the business to perform consistently throughout changing environments. We continue to reflect on and adapt what we are doing to ensure we deliver long-term benefits to our customers and clients and to our investors, both debt and equity. You can expect us to continue to keep delivering in this way as the business grows in the right way. Measured growth focused on better returns, investment where we can deliver greater efficiency, and enhancing of our funding and capital positions, all underpinned by improved customer and client propositions. And with that, we'd like to thank you for listening. We look forward to a more fulsome discussion of our results post the year end. And if I can ask the operator to open up the lines for any further questions you may have.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypads, ensuring the line is unmuted locally so I can retrieve your name. If you need to withdraw your question, please press star two. The first guest is Tom Gibney. Tom, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. First of all, I just wondered how we should think about the slight slowdown in cash income growth from about 9% in the second quarter to 7% in the third quarter. And then secondly, most of the growth in portfolio purchases looks like it's come from the Nordics. Could you give us a flavour of the mix of the purchases, between assets, asset types and so on? Thirdly, with the increase in the IRR that you've shown on slide 13, has that been due to a change in mix? Has it been due to a change, towards the Nordics, or has there been sort of any change in like-for-like IRRs? And then just last one, just to come back on the point that you made around leverage, your medium-term target is still below 4.5 turns, but you gave that target for the first time in mid-2017, and said mid-term was about 2 years. Do you still target 4.5 times in mid-2019, or are you extending that period out a little bit?
I have to say, firstly, thanks, Tom. I think with the number of questions you've asked, we could probably use the next half hour. So let me try and deconstruct that a little bit and hopefully provide a good colour on clearly what's very pertinent topics. So if I take them just in the order which have been raised, and James, Matthias, John, feel free to contribute as well. I think in terms of the cash income growth, you quite rightly call out the fact that it has slowed slightly from 9% to 7%. 7% is still, I think, a satisfactory level of growth. I think, if anything, it just shows the frailties of looking at individual quarters. As ever, you see some ups and downs. I wouldn't take that as a sign of a step down in terms of trend. In terms of the geographical mix of purchases, you are right to say that we have had some good success in the Nordics. That's in keeping with our investment case for why we actually acquired the carve-out in the first place. And within the Nordics, there is a slightly higher proportion of FS debt, which we've been successful in, which is one of the reasons why you can sometimes see a slightly lower gross money multiple, but the net returns remain consistent because it's a lower cost to collect. Your point next, I think, was on net margin, and you quite rightly point out the improvement that we've seen of over 100 bips. I think you'll also see that extends to looking at the overall cash EBITDA margin as well, where you've seen a slight improvement as well. And I think that's just purely because we're beginning to leverage scale. There will be some quarters where we improve more than others. And again, it goes back to my point around the frailties of making quarter-on-quarter comparison. But we've guided people previously to say that as the business grows, we believe we'll be able to benefit from leveraging overheads and improving cost-to-collect ratio at a gross profit level. And I think you're starting to see that come through there. Finally, in terms of the thorny topic of future leverage guidance, yes, we continue to direct people towards 4.5 times. I think we always said that it would be 4.5 times, all things being equal. Clearly, in the midst of that process and between the timeline which you allude to and now, we've undertaken the transaction to acquire the carve-out business. Ideally, we would have delivered faster. We haven't got there. We've had the transaction which has been in place. but I'd direct you to say that it's medium term is as from now, as opposed to expecting us to get to 4.5 times by mid-19.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your question, Tom. The next question is from the line of Wolfgang Felix. Wolfgang, please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you very much. It's Wolfgang Felix from Saria. I've got three questions. One on your purchases. Obviously, the multiples are coming down. You have said they're lower risk. I was hoping that you could maybe give us some more color around that and how maybe in the future we can get comfortable with what in the past has been a relatively static statistic, which has allowed us to understand your risk somewhat better than I'm afraid we will be in the future. The second one is your debt-to-book ratio obviously remains highly elevated, even though you're moving some of it into a new facility, non-recourse facility. And I'm just wondering what your – or if there is a strategy or so to lower this going forward. And third one, with respect to the new facility, you said it's amortizing. Given that you're currently net cash flow flat, presumably you're going to have to basically borrow to pay down this facility over the next 4 years. And I was wondering if we were going to see any of that effect also in the P&L or where else in your statement, how the booking is going to work for that, basically. Thank you.
Hi, Wolfgang. I'll pick up the first one on the sort of, I guess, current purchases trends. So I think as we've intimated before, you shouldn't draw the association of money multiple changes to what our actual return thresholds are. So I think as we've sort of intimated, we're very confident the return thresholds we will be achieving on front book, as we've done consistently throughout the past quarters, will remain in line with our guidance around sort of the mid-teens thresholds. So I think we're very happy that despite there being a change in profile of money multiples, which largely attributes to the type of assets we're buying in this specific quarter, will be still in line with our return thresholds.
But would there be a way that you can break this out maybe in the future for people so that we can somehow track the performance? Because otherwise the mixed numbers as we receive them right now are very difficult to interpret.
I think we're struggling, Wolfgang, to give you forward guidance as to what might come to the market and what we might purchase. I think you're right to say that the gross money multiples have historically been stable. They have been. We've had one quarter where the proportion of UK paying portfolios has been elevated compared to the overall spend. That's the reason why, and to head off potentially a second question, why the UK gross money multiple moves from 2 to 1.8 from Q2 to Q3. It also explains why the overall GMM softened slightly. But as James quite rightly says, the net returns should continue to be stable. And that's as much as we're going to be able to give you at this juncture.
Okay, thank
Maybe
you.
Maybe if I cover off your other 2 points.
Yes.
In terms of the debt to book, so just for clarity, I presume you mean the LTV and looking at net debt compared to ERC. Clearly, we don't manage to that metric, given that we are a CMS player rather than a pure play debt purchaser, because otherwise that means that we don't take into account the earnings which are generated by our broader service offering and specifically 3PC. Having said that, you will see that as we seek to achieve our net leverage reduction in terms of net debt to earnings, then naturally the debt to book will also come down at the same time. The two things will move in tandem.
And when you say earnings, and you're obviously quoting a cash EBITDA figure, you're quoting or you're guiding towards a 4.5 times leverage. We can all do the math as to how high cash EBITDA would have to be at that juncture. Would that be translating into net cash flow?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think just in terms of your point around cash flow, which takes me to your third point around the securitisation, and I think you used the phrase net cash flow flat and whether we would be confident of covering the interest as a result or what the accounting might be. Appreciate your sensitivity to make
Your interest, and you'll have to pay down the facility effectively over the next 4 years. So the amortisation, really.
There's undoubtedly the amortisation which will flow through. I think just going back to the basic premise of net cash flow flat, I think we probably have a slightly nuanced view on that in that, you know, I just look at the last quarter and we generated $93 million of underlying cash flow. Clearly, when looking at any debt arrangement, we make sure that we are confident and capable of covering both the interest payments and the repayment of any capital. This is no different, and in effect is a substitution of the RCF for a slightly lower cost of funding on a different capital instrument.
I realise that. But it's not going to show up in the P&L in any way, is it?
If fully consolidated, Wolfgang.
It will be. Okay, understood. Thank you. Thank you very much.
If that's where you're going.
Yeah.
Thanks, Wolfgang.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sunny Shabra. Sunny, please go ahead.
Hello, hi. Thanks for taking my questions. My first question is regarding the asset-backed financing facility that you have signed up, which is currently using 20% of the 84-month ERC. Could you give us some color around the type of NPLs or PLs that is going to be moved in the SPV, just to give a sense of the total flexibility you will have for your 84-month ERC in UK? And effectively, do you also have a target in mind with respect to the mix of asset-backed financing and the high-yield bonds that you see in the capital structure?
Thank you for the question. Just to be clear, it is a, you know, it's a done deal. It's a static transaction for now. And therefore, the assets are across the various sectors we cover in the industry in the UK. So there's financial services, retail, as well as telco in there. It is a non-paying, non-performing book as such. And, you know, as we explained before, it's amortizing over 4 years. It's a static structure. I hope that addresses your question.
I think the only point which I'd say is the portfolios have not been selected by their credit quality. I would stress that. It was an arbitrary selection, and all of the assets have a minimum age of 1 year, just to head off any concerns that the ABS has cherry-picked assets of a better quality. And then in terms of your pointers to the relative proportionality of the facility relative to the debt stack, or to ERC, clearly you're focused upon 84-month ERC. I think I'd always direct people to think that actually our ERC is naturally greater than 84 months, and an awful lot of our metrics on 120, which I think is probably the right way to look at it. I'm not going to give guidance as to how much, you know, and speculate as to what we might do in the future. As Matthias quite rightly says, this is a fixed facility, and we've seen it very much as complementary, not substitutional to the high yield markets.
Understood. And clearly this facility is improving your WACC, giving you more flexibility to buy. Would you be thinking about translating into, you know, Nordics as well, where you have a large amount of ERC?
We're not making any comments on that at the current time. I think, you know, there's clearly a lot of ERC. The Nordics certainly has very accurate ERC forecasts in the same way that the UK has, and that was clearly attractive to the providers of this funding.
Yeah, got it. Fair enough. Other question regarding the exceptional expenses. There was around $11 million of exceptionals in the third quarter, in the current quarter, and there has been an ongoing around $30 million in the last year as well. Could you give us, you know, more color around what's going on, which projects are running, and, you know, to have more guidance around how much should we expect going forward?
Yeah, again, I'm not going to make forward-looking statements and guidance on that. I think you are right to pick out the fact that there was those recurring costs. The bulk of it is in DAC, and you remember that previously we've talked about how we are bringing together a number of operating platforms, a number of sites, a number of legal entities as a result of the combination of GFKL, Tesh, and Incasso Services. This was always expected as part of our investment hypothesis in the region, as we look to simplify across each of those three bases. That incurs some one-off costs. They're non-recurring in nature, and as a result, that accounts for the bulk of the 11 which you talked about. There is some small costs which are one-off in nature in the UK associated with the migration of our 3PC activity into our Centre of Excellence for Collections, which is our lead site. And then within the Nordics, obviously, we've just acquired the business, so therefore there is one or two one-off costs as we disaggregate the business from the Intrum and Lindorf motherships.
Understood. In terms of the ongoing projects that you're running, excluding the one-off costs, is it going to be in line with what we've been seeing over the past couple of quarters, which was around $6 million?
I'm not going to give that guidance.
Understood. Just lastly, I think this question has been asked previously as well, just to get a bit more color on the GMMs. I think page 26, where you have showed the different purchases you've done in the three different geographies and the GMMs. It'll be really helpful to have, I think you mentioned that you're buying more paying book in the UK. It'll be really helpful to have a split of percentage of paying versus non-paying in the quarter, which some of your competitors already provide, just to get a context of what the GMM actually translates to. And on the same topic, could you give us more color around why the purchases are much more in the paying portfolios in the UK right now versus non-paying? Is it just the supply-demand context, or just to have more color around that, that'd be great.
So I'll pick up the point around sort of the UK paying split. So I think, as you've seen in this quarter, we obviously have had a higher proportion. I wouldn't say that's a change in strategy. You know, we bought paying books in the UK historically. By virtue of this quarter, there was a reasonably large one-off transaction that is not something that I suspect will be reoccurring. And I guess this is the point around diversification, where we are able to deploy our capital not only across different asset types, but obviously now across different geographies. And like I said, they're all assets that we are very familiar with and ones that we obviously measure against our minimum return thresholds.
Got it. And just lastly, I think previously you have given some guideline around how we should think about the paying book and non-paying book GMMs in the UK. Are you able to provide something similar for the Nordics as well, as that's becoming a significant size of total books? It'd be good to have some guidance, not future-looking guidance, but just guideline around how we should think about GMM for a non-paying versus a paying book.
We'll consider that in due course. So thank you for giving the steer that would be useful. And equally, thank you for your steer that having a split between paying and non-paying for gross money multiples would be worthy of disclosure. So your points are well made and noted, and obviously we'll consider them. I think the one point which I would say, if you were looking to do that to make comparison to some of our peers who already disclose, which is the context you gave, I think there's one industry challenge that we've got, which is how do we actually define paying? So, you know, we have a definition as to the number of payments which have been made in the last 3 months or last 6 months. Whether all of our competitors have the same definition might be just a point of caution or caveat if you were to try and do a transfer of conclusion. But nevertheless, points are well made. Let us think about that. Thank you.
Thank you. That's all for me.
Thank you, Sunny. The next question is from the line of Roberto Henriquez. Roberto, please go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my questions. I just have a couple of questions. First and foremost, just to start off with the 3PC business, I'm just wondering how we should think about margins in this part of the business. So when I look at your account and I look at the 3 months in 2017 and in 2018, there seems to have been a meaningful reduction in terms of the overall margin. So just high-level numbers, I'm seeing something from about 25% to about 15% reduction. So I'm just wondering what that means in terms of the Nordic carve-out business and how maybe the margins are different in that business and the actual quality of that that franchise. The second question is really with regard, again, to the 3PC business in the UK. So when I look at that slide where you talk about consolidating the business and relocating it, it kind of seems like a polite way of, you know, talking about maybe shutting some of that business down. I just wanted to know, is this the Interlaken Fredriksen business, and, you know, is this being shut down, and should we expect any type of impairment on the investment that you made, I think, about 4 or 5 years ago, or maybe that impairment has already happened at some point. And then lastly, just going on to your cash flow bridge, so I guess the number which is advanced with regard to excess cash before the replacement rate is 269, and then you obviously go through the mechanics of, you know, the various gross money multiples. But if, for example, if we had to calculate the replacement rate using your marginal purchase rate, which is the 1.8, it would basically imply that the business is negative cash generative to the tune of about 30 million, because obviously, you know, when you think about replacing portfolios, you know, the 2017 multiple is probably less useful, particularly because there seems to have been a meaningful reduction, especially in the DAC region. So I just wanted a bit of context in terms of how we should think about your cash flow generation capabilities.
All right, so let me pick up the points around, I guess, our strategy and our overall 3PC business. So obviously the referring to downward shift in margins, I guess it depends on which data point you pick, and you've obviously picked a high to where it is today. I think if you look at it actually over a you know, Q1 2016 to Q3 2018, actually you'll see that it's increased over time, and certainly if you look at it on a more recent basis, you'll see it's also increased over the last few quarters. I think, yeah, and overall, I think it's also very difficult, as we've indicated before, to look at it in isolation, because there is inevitably, in the way that we construct deals, in today's market, we do deals that are combined 3PC and DP deals, where we outsource to purchase. So and although we don't disclose the overall returns of such transactions, the two inevitably are intertwined. So just be careful on that point. And then if I focus on our sort of overall success of the UK servicing transaction, and you referred to Interlaken's Fredrickson's that we acquired several years ago now, I think overall that has been hugely successful to our UK franchise. And I think overall, as we've intimated, there have been several strategic deals and partners that we've created out of the back of that transaction, many of which we've converted into more profitable deals on a combined servicing and DP business, as the market has tended to evolve in that way. And actually the transaction we referred to in the UK this quarter, the paying portfolio actually was flipped out of the 3PC business as we've migrated or migrating a large part of the portfolio and the payments business to our lease operation, where we can obviously service it at a much lower cost to where it has previously been sited down in London. So all of that very rational. I think, look, as we look at our servicing business going forward, and you mentioned, is this a signal to close our servicing business? Absolutely not. And I think, you know, we still continue to support the fact that servicing and purchasing are a key feature to how our clients want to work with us. I would say there are selective areas where we may not work in servicing, but it is very low margin. But I think we still remain that servicing is a key feature to our overall strategy in all of our regions. And the moving of the operations up into our Leeds headquarters is a perfect example of how we intend to focus on core activities, improve efficiencies, lower our cost bases, and leverage our assets across our franchises.
And I think as a result, we're not anticipating any impairment. There hasn't been any impairment on our investment in Fredrickson's. Don't anticipate any going forward. And just for clarity, it was a 30 million investment. So we're not talking material sums which were paid even back in the day and the goodwill which arose from it. Just thinking a little bit more about your margins, I think James is right to say, obviously, the starting point of comparison can give wildly different answers. I think we have said that the margin has softened a little bit over the last course of, say, the last year. And I think we've equally said historically that there's been a number of dynamics which are at play. There is definitely the new business which has been brought in, which, as James says, is quite often connected to the DP and the higher returns that we've got. But then critically as well, within the DAC context, we've had the impact of those flipped portfolios within the region. that's had a material impact upon the margin for what's left of the business post the extraction of that highly profitable paper into our DP business. And if you think that on the 3P site, C side, you've incurred all of the costs to break in those accounts, and then it's the DP side which gets all of the upside. Equally, there has been a slight softening in the 3PC margin in the Nordics, not because of existing business, more because of the ramp-up of the Nordics payment services business. And again, you remember that I alluded to in the script the fact that some of the losses were widening as we went through the ramp-up phase in order that we could generate successful scale to allow for the disposal. That has an impact. And then obviously in terms of sort of UK relocation, we incur a degree of element of dual run cost as we look to migrate across. So apologies, a more fulsome answer there, but I think it's just worth just reiterating some of the messages of the past.
If I could just interject over there. So obviously there has been some movement in the margin. So what should we think about, you know, your longer term margin in this business, you know, when you account for all those strategic moves that you've had between the debt management and the debt purchasing side? Is it the 25% or is it the 15%?
I think actually when we're looking at the gross margin, I think our calculations show that it's actually just sub 20. I'm not expecting it to be any fundamental change from that.
Okay. If you went back to early 16, it was in the mid-teens. So.
Right, okay, very good. And then just the last comment, I guess, on the cash flow generation capability.
Yeah,
I mean, if you look at the marginal port GMM, it clearly shows that, you know, if you keep on purchasing portfolios at this rate, you won't actually have any positive cash flow generation.
Let me pick it up. Thank you for raising it, Roberto. I think just one final point just to say before I do answer that question. You know, again, we constantly say be very careful about making judgments about trend based upon individual quarters, which is why, you know, I welcome the question that you're asking as to what, how should people think about the business going forward. Clearly what we are able to earn in terms of cash income and our 3PC in terms of gross profit can depend and does depend upon the type of placements that we receive from clients in the immediate periods before the quarters, before they start to liquidate. So you do get a little bit of volatility. But again, that's just a basic point, which I'm sure most people are aware of. Right, in terms of the cash flow generation and the question that you've asked, we've included our standard waterfall so that you can understand exactly how the business throws off cash before replacement rate. You've made the comment with regards to gross money multiple, and I understand why you have. I think equally I would make the comment that the cash waterfall per se is flawed. It is inherently conservative because it fails to understand the collections that are going to be thrown off the purchases that have been made in the recent period. So while I can't obviously put on there what a future expectation might be from those purchases and those investments, I would encourage you to think about what the last 6 months' purchases might do to the conclusions that you've reached. And if you take on board the fact that we purchased $221 million, gross money multiple of 1.8 times, which you allude to, gives you an ERC of just under $400 million. You can work out what the year one collections are from the appendix and how we split out the ERC flow. But if you take that as around 25%, that's $100 million worth of gross collections. Typical cash EBITDA margin with a front-loaded cost to collect curve, let's call it 50%, which is obviously much higher than what the lifetime collect ratio is. And then immediately you've got another $50 million worth of cash EBITDA, which I think is a very different feel to how you you look at whether the business is generating excess cash or not.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Roberto. If we have time for more questions, the next one is from the line of Helen Rodriguez. Helen, please go ahead.
Hi there. I've got a bit of a random list, if that's all right. Are you going to disclose the sort of orders of magnitude, how big the divestment, the purchasing business is, roughly?
We can do. Do you want to run through your random list, Helen, and then see if we can...
Okay.
...human type of randomness.
So I... You always reference lawyer service activity as coming out of one of your categories, and I don't actually know what that is. Also, you mentioned that you've sort of enhanced or something your German ABS facility, so I just wanted to understand that. And then Maybe I'm being a bit thick, but on your slides where you have the ERC roll forward, which is something like 220, I always look at the previous slide of year 11 and try and sort of reconcile the two numbers, and I can't do it. I'd be appreciate, you know, you explaining how we do that. What else was that? I think that was, most, I think.
Okay, so we are going to divide and conquer, given the nature of the question. So, Matthias, do you want to cover off the disposal value?
Yeah, quickly.
Value?
Thanks for the question. We've not disclosed the disposal value. We would, however, like to guide you that it's only a small part of our Nordic servicing or the group servicing business. In the last OM, we disclosed the split of cash income on an LTM basis to September 17, and there the payments unit is a subcomponent of the value-added services line with a total cash income noted for below £20 million. I hope that gives you some sort of feel where this is.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthias. John, lawyer service and what it is in DAC.
Yeah, hi, Helen. Good morning. So the lawyer service revenue is prevalent to our DAC region. So this is where we utilise the services of a third party to initiate the legal collections process. And in turn, we utilise the services of what we refer to as a Dunning lawyer. That Dunning lawyer utilises the services that we have within our DAC region for fulfilment. And by that, I mean the printing, the posting and the sending of letters. And as such, we recognise a small element of income for charging the third party for utilising our own services. And in turn, the Dunning lawyer charges us for services rendered. Now, the net of that is broadly neutral. It's a slight negative margin or a slight positive margin to the Dunning lawyer. And for that reason, that's why we exclude it from both our cash income definition, but also when we look at our collection activity costs as a proportion of our cash income.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you, John. And then I think also in the German context, you made reference to our ABS.
Helen, what was your question on that one?
Somewhere when you're talking about your new ABS, you say something about the old ABS that you've, I don't know what the word you used, enhanced
it. In September last year, we reinvigorated a structure in Germany whereby we securitized a very small amount of assets for a third time. That was a low single-digit amount in euros.
Okay. And actually, in terms of the sort of within the high yield documentation, how much room have you got left now after this 2.5 for securities, securitizing assets?
We'd have to refer you back to the terms of the indenture. I don't have that immediately to hand.
Okay.
And then in the same spirit of playing a straight bat and apologies, I'm aware that time's escaping us. We're over the length of the call. In terms of your specific point around reconciliation of roll-forward periods, obviously we don't have your model in front of us.
I'm not using my model. I'm using your slides. My iPad's closed, but it's slide 25 and 26, I think it is.
Okay, so just help us understand the specific question, because I was going to suggest we took it offline to try and help.
I can do that. I can do it offline. It's fine.
Okay, no problems. Okay, well, with that fulsome debate, I think we've gone through more than an hour's worth of conversation and discourse. We very much appreciate the opportunity to do so that you can understand how we're trying to grow the business in a very sustainable, considered manner. You understand how our funding strategy is evolving and how, once again, this is another quarter whereby we believe that we've delivered a step forward in terms of growth, in terms of scale, and in terms of diversification. And with that, thanks once again for your ongoing support, and we'll speak soon, no doubt. Bye now.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you all for joining today's conference. You may now disconnect your lines.